This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Across Australia, on the Community Radio Network, to over 70 community radio stations around the nation. This is Word for Word, coming to you from Australia's first gay and lesbian radio station, Melbourne's Joy 94.9.
Hello and welcome to Word for Word, Dean Beck with you today. Now, if you could possibly imagine what it is like to be born with both genitalia, the challenges that presents, the discrimination, the difficulty throughout, one person in our community is prepared to speak up about it and has not only done that, but succeeded in life to become the Mayor of Hobsons Bay. It is my great pleasure to welcome to Word for Word, Tony Briffer.
Hello, thank you.
Tony, your life is an extraordinary one, and yet you go through it with the biggest smile and the greatest amount of energy. You are an inspiration. Let's start, I guess, when you realised you're a bit different.
Wow, I don't think I ever remember a time that I didn't know.
Yeah.
I was different, to be honest. I'm a twin, so I've got a non-identical twin sister, and I've been going to the Royal Children's Hospital from as long as I remember. So I'd always go there as a child with my twin sister. Obviously, my parents will take us, and I'd be the one having the, you know, the procedures and the examinations and all that sort of stuff, not my twin. So I pretty much knew automatically, you know, from as long as I remember, that there was something different about me.
Unlike most children who go to the Royal Children's Hospital, it was your most intimate bits that were being fiddled with each and every time, I can only imagine.
Well, it was actually quite funny, in a way, looking back at it. I mean, you know, I've got a sense of humour and I see things
sure.
in a peculiar way, perhaps. But as a kid, my mum would call that area my privates.
Yep.
And I used to think, well, it's a strange name for something that obviously isn't that private.
And it is creating so much attention.
That's right.
Right, yes.
And I have to say, because I'm a very strong advocate for people with disabilities, and those experiences made me that way, because I grew up with all these children just so terminally ill and seriously ill at the Royal Children's Hospital. And at the time I was thinking, well, I must be really sick as well.
Mm.
Only to find out later on as an adult that I was actually never ill to begin with. I was just born with a genetic variation, and really, it's not a medical condition. It was just a biological variation where I'm lucky enough to be born with extra bits.
And that's the difference that you have made it, I guess. Mm. It, as you know, is a condition that has destroyed many people.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the really tough part about it. Actually, you see it as an opportunity almost to be so different.
Well, if I can just say, it's probably not the condition that destroyed so many people. It's society and the shame, the stigma, the taboo that the medical community has attached to having that condition over so many years. Fortunately, that's changed, and I'm very pleased to have been part of that with the AIS Support Group Australia, that we've worked with the medical community to break down that old treatment paradigm. But you're right, look, and it's something that I celebrate, that I'm very open about. Being involved in politics, there's no such thing as personal secrets anyway, so I might as well be very open about it.
There is that. Now, you're going to have to excuse me if I'm clumsy in my language time to time, but please correct me.
It's good that we're having the discussion, so I certainly don't mind people being clumsy around the language.
And that's why I'm so pleased that you're here, that we can talk about this so openly. You mentioned AIS before. That stands for Androgen Insensitivity Syndrome.
Yes, so androgen insensitivity.
Or androgen insensitivity.
Yeah, insensitivity syndrome. So what it means is that it's a condition where even though I'm genetically male, so typically male, 46XY, my body didn't develop along normal pathways to be male because my body doesn't respond fully to androgens. So I am what they call insensitive to androgens.
Which is the trigger for the testes to descend and for the penis to develop. Because at the end of the day, we're all varied women. Through birth.
That's exactly right. So
male or female, married women.
Yeah, yeah. So if those things don't happen, you end up having a child that looks exactly female. In my case, when I was born, doctors weren't sure. So yes, I had a vagina and I had largely female genitalia, but my clitoris was somewhat large, and I had lumps in my above my groin area, I guess, where they realised I've got testes. So. Yeah.
And I guess at first glance that wouldn't have been noticed.
Oh, no, they knew. That,
well, oh, did they?
Yeah, because my... I'm bragging now because my clitoris
because your lumps were quite big
because my clitoris was so well, but I mean clearly it was more of a clitoris than a penis. I mean yeah. I certainly couldn't urinate from it or anything like that. And if look to be honest, if it was an inch long, the inch was the critical thing at the time. If it was an inch, they would say, okay, it's a male, and do horrible, horrible surgeries to make me a male. In my case, it was a lot smaller than that, so they decided to go along the female path. And that then involved all sorts of surgeries as a child, including being castrated. So they did remove my testes when I was a child.
And this is the interesting part. The whole thing's interesting, but I guess the sad part is that it's a decision that you don't get to make.
Yeah, and the High Court has made a decision in the early 80s that talks about doctors not being able to do non-therapeutic and irreversible surgeries to children. And that's exactly what these surgeries are. So that decision came down to the High Court in the early 80s, and yet treatment of children with intersex conditions continued unabated in this country without family court approval.
Sometimes without family approval.
Largely without family approval. Let's face it, families take the advice of doctors.
Yeah.
If doctors say, this is what we need to do to your child has got this illness or condition, we need to do this, that's what you do. Mm. You do what's best for your child, and that means listening from the professionals.
This is one of those freaks of nature that is evident right throughout biology, right throughout nature.
Yep, a beautiful freak of nature. Absolutely.
Indeed.
And it's
indeed.
Been going on for as long as ever.
Yeah.
And
yet, why is it that it's only now that it's even remotely discussed?
At least in Western culture. If you look at other countries, the Dominican Republic is a wonderful example. They have members of their community, they revere them and they call them guavadochis.
Right.
And they have a condition called 5-alpha reductase deficiency syndrome.
Oh, well
which
done.
Which means there's an enzyme, that these people are born with an enzyme deficiency, which means that the person is born looking completely female, but then come puberty, they actually masculinize. So they go through masculinizing puberty, their testes descend, their penis develops, and they become males. So guavadochis means latent eggs.
So it's the same process, but it happens at puberty, not pre-birth.
That's right,
in
because
the
womb. That particular enzyme converts testosterone to dihydrotestosterone, which helps the development of male genitalia. Sorry, pretty technical for a second.
No, not at all. Yeah. It's great that we can actually sort of demystify some of this because it's so clouded in secrecy or has been for so long. And that has resulted in some fairly sad and tragic outcomes for many, many people.
For lots of people. And I do know lots of people that have, had very difficult lives as a result. But if, for example, ABC Television tonight at 10 p.m, there's Orchids documentary, which I'm also on, but that'll showcase another example of a woman with complete AIS, androgen insensitivity syndrome, and her story. And because it is a genetic condition, she has the condition, and so does her sister. And we have members of the support group that have, a number of people in their families with our condition. In fact, one support group meeting, we had two women turn up, and we knew that they were turning up. But what we didn't know is that they were cousins. So they turned up to a support group meeting, and they're like,
"Oh, they bumped into each other there and then."
That's how they found out. And again, it's because of that shame and stigma that family didn't even speak about it.
Is there any research to suggest that this is genetic?
Yes.
So it is a family type of thing.
That's right. Really? Well, it's certainly a genetic condition. Yeah. So if in my case, for example, if I had an identical twin, my identical twin would have had the condition as well. It is a genetic condition.
Instead, you have a non-identical twin.
That's right.
And you were both raised as girls.
Yeah. So she is genetically female, yeah. I'm genetically male, etc. And we were raised as girls. I assume they felt that having a twin sister would help me also identify as female. Mm-hmm. Probably did the opposite. So we went to the local Catholic girls' school. I was always interested in girls. So, you know, I was the lesbian at the school. Although I wasn't out, you know, I had to do the whole thing about pretending to be straight and whatever. But I, you know, didn't go to socials or whatever. So, look, it was pretty difficult. And I was very different to my sister.
Were you the butch one?
Not really.
Right.
Not really.
Okay.
So if I have, and I have got some photos, I'll show you some photos of me, you know, as Antoinette. I can show you photos of me in dresses and whatever, you know, 10 years ago.
And were quite comfortable in that, were you? Or?
Yeah, look, because it's funny. With me, my journey hasn't been about gender identity. It's not that I woke up one day and thought, no, I want to be a bloke. With me, it was I wanted to be the person that nature intended. So when I found out about the nature of my condition, and I was 29, and I found out only because of the internet.
How did you find out at 29?
29. I found out because part of the whole treatment paradigm is lie. You lie to your patients. You don't tell them the truth. If they do, they can't handle it. They'll go hysterical. They might go nuts. So they don't tell us the truth. So when I was 29, thanks to the internet, I did some searching, and I found the AIS support group in the UK.
What led up to you sort of questioning, I guess? What was it that, I mean, you'd had all the operations as a kid, I guess, but what was that thing at 27, 28, 29 that sort of led to you going, hang on a minute, I need to look into this a little further?
Because whilst I was okay as a lesbian and frankly, you know, sexually it was all good as a lesbian,
and
I always felt uncomfortable with my partner's calling me a woman, I guess, because I always felt that I'm more than that. To be true to myself, I am more.
Oh, geez, you've just upset a few people, but go on.
Well, you know, I am. I am biologically, I am more than a woman.
Than a man.
That's exactly right. So as Antoinette, I was living a lie in just being a female. And as Tony, I would be completely living a lie if I said that I'm completely male. So I'm very comfortable in saying that, okay, for the sake of, you know, life and whatever, my name is Tony, but I am both male and female. I'm very comfortable with that. Get over it.
And you actually celebrate the term other.
I do, because I am male and female. I am other. You know, even in the council chambers, the local law is that councillors is to call the mayor Mr. Mayor or Madam Mayor. I don't mind which one they call me. Mm-hmm. You know, they could use either one.
I heard an interview with you where you explained the level of acceptance that you have received from within your community in the city of Hobsons Bay, and that when you received the mayoral robes, you were welcomed by all sectors quite extraordinarily.
Yeah, and I have to say, in particular, that night, it was an amazing night when I was elected mayor, and the chambers was it was overflowing. There were people outside the chambers, like people couldn't actually all fit in. And when I was elected mayor, standing ovation, cheers all around. Afterwards, after the meeting, getting up and meeting people that were in the gallery, there was obviously our community, the gay and lesbian community. There was the Muslim community. There were so many different parts of the broader Hobsons Bay community that supported me. And beautifully, and it's very touching for me, Muslim community, for example, the male Muslims were able to embrace me, literally embrace me and shake my hand to congratulate me. But also the Muslim women were able to do that as well. And normally Muslim women wouldn't shake the hands of men.
You have another man.
But they did with me. And, you know, I found that extremely touching.
Yeah.
Always will.
Your election to the position of Mayor of Hobsons Bay wasn't all smooth sailing.
Yep.
In fact, a former Premier of Victoria, Joan Kerner, was quite outspoken about the fact that you were elected to council. Take us through that rather ugly period.
Yeah, that was that was when I was elected Deputy Mayor for my second term. And Ms. Kerner decided to come out and say that she was disappointed that it wasn't a woman that was elected as deputy mayor. And, you know, well, you know, she started talking about how minority groups and all that sort of thing and how women should be elected. And
how many boxes do you want to tick?
Well, exactly right. You know, and I was like, hello, Joan. You know, in fairness, you know, I did spend 31 years of my life as a woman. I am a woman and a man. And it was just, just completely absurd that she would even go there. The reality was that I'm not a member of the Labor Party. I'm not a member of her Labor list. Emily's list, and that was the real issue. I'm very proud to say that I'm an independent, and I serve the people of Hobson's Bay directly without having to worry about what a political party want me to do.
Our special guest is Councillor Tony Briffer, Mayor of the City of Hobson's Bay. We'll be back with more after this. Dean Beck with you across Australia on the Community Radio Network.
Word for Word, delve into the extraordinary lives of everyday people.
Word for Word, challenging, inspiring, engaging and entertaining. Broadcast live on Joy 94.9, Sundays from 11 a.m. and supported by the Community Broadcasting Foundation.
Tony Briffer is my guest, Mayor of Hobson's Bay, and out, proud, loud, intersex, part of our community. Tony.
Very much so.
When did you come to a comfortable resolution with it, to the point where you outed yourself, I guess?
Which time? I guess I came out as a lesbian years ago first, and then I came out, in a big way as an intersex person in 2000. And when I say that, I came out by appearing on a 60 Minutes program.
Yeah, there's no much, no bigger way to really come out, is there, than 60 Minutes?
I have to admit, sorry, I'm laughing, but I'll never forget actually doing it, because I hadn't thought about the actual fact that I was actually coming out. So,
yeah.
So I did the program and everything, and I was more concerned about making sure that I represent the intersex community accurately and don't offend any families affected by intersex conditions, but also my own family. It was that was my main focus. But then that was on the Sunday night that it was shown. Mm. On the Monday morning, driving to work, I realised, you know, some people might have actually seen this.
Yeah, so, like millions of people, really.
So I get into the office, and, you know, frankly, I have to admit, I don't think I did any work for the rest of that week. Everybody just came up to me and spoke to me about, you know, 60 Minutes and being out and, wow, things make sense now. And I have to say, probably unkindly, a couple of people annoyed me in terms of they were homophobic and they didn't particularly like, you know, me as a lesbian beforehand. But then once I came out as being an intersex person, it was like, oh, well, it's okay now. I understand it, because you're not really a female liking female and God made it. Like, it's just nonsense. So, yeah.
Hang on a minute.
Yeah,
I know. Let's explore that
really
a little.
Uncomfortable.
They were more comfortable with you being intersex than they were with you being a lesbian.
Yeah. Yeah. Because God, me this way. So yeah,
God didn't make you gay.
Yeah, that's right. That was just a deviant perversion of guilt, of course. But I am just joking.
Aren't we a wonderful? Aren't we a wonderful species?
So yeah, that's right. Homophobia only exists in one species.
Yeah, there is that. But the intersex thing is something that many are discriminated, you know, for naturally occurring. And that's got to have presented a few challenges for you. You can't tell me that it's all been a bed of roses from the entire community.
Yeah. I tend not to dwell on that. I really can. I don't know what it is about me, but I tend to move on from the negativity really well. So whenever there has been any of that, I just, you know, okay, their problem, and move on. I do focus on the positive stuff. So I'm at a loss to actually be able to give you an example of one at the moment. Oh, sorry. No, actually, there's one. And even that was a positive. You know, it's funny how you turn things into positive. A councillor at the time tried to use that against me in a political debate.
Really?
Sadly.
That's a low blow.
The person did.
No pun intended, but that is a low blow.
Yeah, and, you know, They tried, and I have to say, the community outrage that it sparked and the support, you know.
How wonderful.
So, you know, that was a negative, I guess, but it was really actually such a positive. And even that was an educational experience. All three local newspapers ended up having front page articles about me, about intersex conditions, educating people about what intersex is. It was a huge positive. So, yeah.
You have been prepared to front this from, well, for as long as we can remember,
pretty much.
And you've also been active in transforming the way policy is made to be far more accepting and for the language to be far more relevant. Mm. Tell us a bit about that process, because policy change is not an easy one.
No, and I have to say that I'd like to think that I'm active not just for the intersex community, but for the whole rainbow, the queer, GLBTIQ community.
Call that humanity.
Yeah, yeah. Well, human rights. Human rights are human rights, yeah. You know. So I was on the previous government's ministerial advisory committee for the health minister and the attorney general on GLBTIQ issues. Yeah, politics is a good way of getting change, of getting the change that you want. So I sought to get involved in politics to make a difference.
You've made a lot of difference. How do you intend to continue that change? Because there's still stuff to be done. And yet politics can also be, polarise people too. Mm. But you really want to be inclusive in your change.
Yeah, well, it's funny because so far, I seem to be able to bridge the divide, and even in terms of gay and lesbian issues, I bring the community with me, I think. So even with if you look at the gay and lesbian stuff that we're doing with Hobson's Bay City Council, we have that community forum. Now we're in our third year as part of the Midsummer Festival, and we're talking, let's face it, the western suburbs of Melbourne being fully behind Midsummer and our community. If we look at the local governments that are actually supporting Midsummer and that are official partners of Midsummer, there's the Melbourne City Council and the Hobson's Bay City Council. That's it, just us two. So there are ways in politics of being able to lead the debate and lead people to come with you and support causes. Through that, I'm trying my best to show leadership with other councils. So I actually think all Western Suburbs councils are behind us. And today, in Werribee, they've got a Rainbow Family picnic in Werribee. Who would have thought that would ever happen, even last year or 2 years ago, let alone, you know, it's actually happening. So gradually we're making the change that we want.
Tony, when it comes to the intersex community, how broad is it? How many are there? How often does this happen?
Yeah, it is extremely broad. There are a number of, and I mean, you know, tens of different types of intersex conditions. In the case of where a child is born with atypical sex, so where doctors aren't sure if the child is born male or female, that happens in 1 in 4,500 births. So 1 out of every 4,500 births, doctors aren't sure.
That's a very... I mean, originally I would have thought that it was like a 1 in a million type of thing.
So we're talking about 12 kids in Victoria a year.
Yeah.
And that's figures that the Royal Children's Hospital came up with. And I have to say, Royal Children's Hospital are now leading the way in being very progressive about the way that children are treated. I'm pleased to have been part of that and working with the same doctors that treated me as a child. And again, it's part of me moving on and not holding grudges.
Yeah, of course.
You know, I had morning tea with one of the professors that treated me as a child the other week. And they're doing a great job at the Royal Children's Hospital.
Have they changed their policy on how they...
Very much so.
Operate.
Very much so, right. Yeah, very much so.
Literally
so,
operate. Yeah. Right.
Well, look, the surgical outcomes was never a question. The surgical outcomes at the Royal Children's Hospital were excellent. So in terms of the surgical expertise, brilliant. It was more and this took some years to get across to them. It was the legal and ethical aspects of what they were doing and the human rights aspects.
It's a little bit more than circumcision, but like circumcision, culturally we have changed.
I think there's a way to go culturally with circumcision yet, still, to be honest, in that if you look at the hard definition, as I mentioned earlier with the decision in the High Court, is circumcision medically required? No, if it's routine. And is it irreversible? Yes. So Yeah, it's questionable about whether that should routinely happen or not.
But culturally, it is not standard practice anymore.
That's right. That's right.
Although whereas when I was born, it was very much standard practice.
And with treatment of children with intersex conditions, there are steps that the doctors now take through a committee at the hospital, ethics committee. I'm actually trying to get onto that committee as well, so that there's an intersex voice on the committee. And they review the situation. If it is medically required, obviously there's no choice. The surgeries are done.
Sure.
But if it's not medically required and it's irreversible, there are steps to take, and that could include actually going to the family court as well for approval to conduct those surgeries, as it ought to be.
Tony Briffer, I know your mother has had issues with your surgery.
Yep. With the treatment, the whole
treatment, and your treatment,
being
yeah.
lied to. And there's a lot of guilt associated with that. She feels that she allowed doctors to do all these things on me. I mean, I know that she acted in my best interests. She made decisions based on advice that she was given by the doctors. Likewise, I also know that the doctors did what they thought they were was best for me as well. You know, they didn't go out to say, you know, let's really stuff this freak up. they did what they thought they were. Was best for me as well, but we've moved on.
You say that there are 12 kids a year here at Melbourne's Royal Children's Hospital born.
Well, in Victoria.
Or in Victoria with this
some
condition.
Go to the hospital.
Is there a process, a counselling? Is there some sort of understanding that those parents are given these days that wasn't a case then?
Not routinely, no.
Right.
So the support group...
Would that help, do you think?
Absolutely. Meeting other families affected by this condition certainly helps.
Like if the family's got to meet someone like you.
Yeah. And that's what we do. So in the support group, we do that. But I have to say the support from the medical community for the support group really could be a lot better. For that matter, the government support of the support group could be a lot better too. There's no funding or anything for it, so we're all volunteers. But it certainly makes a difference... If we're going to have a family who's got a child with a intersex condition, to meet other parents of adult people with this condition, to show them how, you know, what they went through, how they managed to cope, to show them examples of adults successfully living with those conditions. I mean, even things as if we look at genetic counselling, under the DHHS guidelines of what constitutes a severe genetic abnormality. Incredibly, we are considered, people with intersex conditions are considered a serious genetic abnormality, a genetic defect. Now, if you look
not
at
not a miracle of God,
no, but,
so to speak.
So we're put in the same categories as conditions like spina bifida, Down syndrome and all that. And
really?
We are. So if you look at the numbers of terminations of fetuses with people with my conditions, don't get me wrong, I'm, you know, pro-choice and everything.
Yeah.
Pro-choice means also fully informed, you know.
Yeah,
so, parents or prospective parents are being told that this condition is very serious, it's a serious defect, and some routine terminations occur for people with my condition, and it's not really that serious, frankly.
You seem to have done all right.
Yeah.
Tony Briffer is with us, Mayor of Hobsons Bay. We'll be back with more after this. Dean Beck with you across Australia on the Community Radio Network.
Word for Word, delve into the extraordinary lives of everyday people.
Word for Word, challenging, inspiring, engaging and entertaining. Broadcast across Australia on the Community Radio Network and supported by the Community Broadcasting Foundation.
You're with Dean Beck across Australia on the Community Radio Network. My special guest, Councillor Tony Briffer, Mayor of the City of Hobsons Bay. Councillor, Tony, you're not here in an official capacity, you're here in a personal capacity. Has forming relationships been difficult as an intersex person?
Look, relationships I find quite difficult. A lot of intersex people don't because even though I identify quite solidly as being both male and female, which is just reflects also my physical reality, most people with intersex conditions identify purely as either male or female. So for them, most of them get married, have kids or adopt, should I say.
Because
in my case, I have foster children.
Are most intersex people biologically sterile?
That's correct. Yep, that's right.
Right.
Yeah. So, but also for a large portion of us, we're raised comfortably in one sex. I think the Royal Children's Hospital's research shows that about 92% of people with intersex conditions are raised in the sex in which they're comfortable.
And carry that through,
and
the,
carry
rest
that through
their life.
The rest of their life. Right. That's right. Okay. So, you know, as they get older and get married and establish relationships, you know, so that's all okay. With me, I...
Well, yours wasn't really a total flip, was it?
No.
It was sort of a slight move towards the middle.
That's right. It was, you know, in a half pike position or something. It was, that's right. Backflip. It was a, yeah, because with me, it wasn't about gender at all. It was, I just wanted to be who I was meant to be. So I started taking testosterone because that's what I naturally had. I didn't have ovaries. I had testes that produced testosterone. So I wanted to take testosterone.
To see what happened.
And look, the doctors told me that nothing was going, to be honest, they told me nothing was going to happen.
Because at 29, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen.
That's
type
right.
of thing.
Well,
yeah?
They kept on refusing. So it was, I was almost 31 when I started testosterone. It was only after being on 60 Minutes that they decided to approve it. And within months, though, I'm on this testosterone and things started happening. So my voice changed, my physical features, of my face sort of changed.
And did you feel better then within yourself?
It was kind of, looked, it was scary. It
yeah,
was like,
sure.
Wow, you know, what have they done? And...
And what is happening now?
Who was this person? And, yeah, what's happening now? What am I going to look like? What am I going to be like? Who was I really meant to be? Had doctors not interfered with me? And so since then, it's been a journey of discovery, of self-discovery, of working out who I am, where I am now to the point where it's good. You know, I am male and female physically. And in terms of my gender, I am somewhere in between. And that's all both, and that's all good too.
And you've had... the wonderful privilege, I guess, of fostering kids as well.
Yeah, that's right. So I started fostering kids when I was 26 and was very lucky to have a boy and a girl that remained with me throughout me affirming myself and being who I am.
Were they brother and sister?
Brother and sister.
Right.
So,
right.
And my son still lives... I call him my son, so foster son, foster kids. But so my son still lives with me. My daughter moved out 2 years ago, but I caught up with her again this week. And, you know, so we've got a good relationship. And
And you never thought to adopt or...?
I thought about adopting, but adopting is incredibly difficult. There aren't numbers of really people adopting, and particularly as a single person, it's extremely difficult, so... if I was married, and ironically, you know, I can get married if I wanted to. In fact, I forgot, hang on, what's my birth certificate say? No, I can marry you.
It's like your pardon.
Sorry, I know. I have to keep on thinking what my birth certificate says and who I can actually marry, because not that it should matter these days.
No.
But accordingly, legally, I guess I can marry a woman.
Because
my birth certificate says male at the moment. So my birth certificate's a lie, basically. My birth certificate should say male and female.
Or other or whatever.
Yeah, well, it used to say female. 11 years ago, that was changed to say male. But, you know, it's just as wrong now as it was 11 years ago, frankly. But now, conveniently, I can marry a woman, which is great because that's what I'm attracted to, I guess. But, yeah, it's just a lot of nonsense, really. Yeah. People should be able to be with whoever they want to be with, two consenting adults, and relationships should be recognised irrespective of sex.
You also have a few hobbies, not just counsel.
Yes.
One of them is cars.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that, because you just, not just any old cars either,
do you? Oh, yeah, yeah. Now, I've got this absolutely gorgeous lady. She's 50 years old. It's a she. Her name is
Amy. She's very beautiful.
She's beautiful. Her name is Amy Grace, and she's a 1962 Jaguar Mark II.
Mm.
Dove grey colour, red leather interior.
It's
very
hot.
Original. Yeah, yeah, she's gorgeous.
And it must be your pride and joy. How do you... You're only a little thing yourself, and it's huge.
Yeah, yeah,
so
she's so gorgeous. I've also got an M5 that I play with, but yeah, look, yeah, that's a bit dangerous. The M5 just goes so well,
and
the M5's a classic.
You also love yachting.
Yeah, yeah, so I love sailing. The Alterna Yacht Club is absolutely wonderful, and so I love that. I play music. I play clarinet and love classical music and the like, and yeah.
What is it like in the changing rooms at the yacht shed?
That's a difficulty. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I must admit, we don't have, segregated sort of showers or, you know, private showers. Mm. So I avoid them. In fact, I've never used them. Yeah, I don't do that. So, yeah, it's difficult. Even the other week I went to Bayfit, the local gym, and so I use the family change rooms there. I'm not comfortable using the male ones, and I won't use the female ones anymore. So I just use the family ones there. But the staff there are really good, and
yeah,
they know what's happening. And yeah, no, they're good.
Does it upset you sometimes?
Upset me? Look, it doesn't upset me. That's just, you know,
yeah,
a thing that I have to do. But and to be comfortable, even at work. So I.
But the fact you have to, I guess, double think things, does that ever get you down?
Look, it has in the past. Look, I've done some silly things in the past. Like if I look at. I used to work at Ansett, and I'll mention Ansett now. So I used to work at Ansett.
Oh, they're gone.
And they're gone. And I used to do some real shit. Like, just as a bit of a stir, I'd use the ladies' toilets, and when I finish, I put the seat up just to have people,
yeah, yeah.
The women after me think, oh, hang on.
How many ladies put the seat up?
Hang on, why is the seat up? And of course, you know, I can't urinate standing up anyway, but it was always a bit of a stir.
Yeah.
it's my sixth sense of humour showing. look, it does get upsetting. And I've had to be careful over the years. So I've worked for Department of Defence, for example. So I've worked at a number of defence bases all around the country. And when I go to places, I do have to think carefully about showers, you know.
How you present yourself.
How I present myself. No. That's
how you carry yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, look, say sometimes, especially in country Victoria,
mm-hmm.
where it's more likely to be homophobic, I am more careful, for sure, as everybody in our community is, I'm sure.
Hobson's Bay is in our inner west,
yep.
And traditionally I wouldn't have put that as the most accepting and understanding part of our greater Melbourne region.
Mm.
Do you think you've had a major part to play in changing the way people think out that way?
You know, I'm never comfortable about talking about my contribution. I'll leave that for other people to discuss, but hopefully I have. I certainly hope that I have. I hope that there's years more that I'll be able to contribute. It was certainly lovely on Friday night being at what used to be the Altona Hospital where I was born, opening a queer art exhibition.
Wow. How wonderful how things go around in circles like that.
It's great. And you know, going to Pierce Street afterwards where we have wonderful cafes and restaurants and seeing same-sex couples walking around, you know, holding hands. It's great. So we have a very accepting community in Hobson's Bay, and particularly around the areas of Altona, Williamstown, Newport, Spotswood, South Kingsville. Great. I've never had a problem locally at all.
Tony Briffa, what is ahead for you personally?
Personally, wow. Well, for me, it's about doing as much as I can while I can, so in the council. So I'm loving being mayor, and I'm used to the title of mayor now. It's taken me a couple of months.
Can I just say you've adopted it well? It's on everything.
It's on everything. Well, I do my best. Actually, it's amazing. My website had 210,000 hits last month.
Can you give us the website? Because I've got to say it's a great website.
Oh, thank you. It's briffa.org, so briffa.org.
And you don't hold back there either.
No,
you're quite open about anything and everything.
It's all open. It's all, you know, even on Facebook and Twitter. Look, it's all an open book.
Links to all the other articles that have been about you and
places where I'm going, places where people can see me and what I'm doing locally as well. So yeah.
And you continue to contribute to not just the greater community, but also to the intersex community.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. and the wider GLBTIQ community, and certainly next Sunday, Pride March, I'll be there. Wearing the frock and the bling. Sorry, I shouldn't say that. I should say the mayoral robes and the mayoral jewel of office. Sorry.
And next.
It's easier saying frock and bling.
And it will be my great honour to, together with my colleague here at Joy, Beck Savick, we will be broadcasting the entire proceedings. So that's going to be a lot of fun from Fitzroy Street in St Kilda. So, Tony Briffa, it's been a delight to meet you, to get to know you. And you are an absolute inspiration, not just to the intersex community, but to us all. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
There'll be a podcast of this interview available for download from Joy's website, joy.org.au. And if you would like to correspond with the program, please send us an email, wordforword@joy.org.au. I'm Dean Beck. You keep well. Take care. Till next time. Bye for now.
Word for Word is produced by Robert Briley and presented by Dean Beck and Sue Wilkinson. From Australia's first gay and lesbian radio station, Melbourne's Joy 94.9. Word for Word is made possible thanks to funding provided by the Community Broadcasting Foundation and is distributed nationally to over 70 radio stations in the Community Radio Network.
Service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.